welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call. 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your questions, some topics to talk over, Zorba.
Yes, myths, presumptions, facts about obesity. Fascinating article from the New England Journal of Medicine that if you want to lose weight, you will want to hear about. Mm-hmm. And the Journal of Pediatrics, great discussion about autism. Are we giving too many vaccines too soon? What's the scientific evidence so that you, as a parent, can make the decision of what you think is in the best interest of your child?
Okay, and our recipe.
Fudgy olive oil brownies. I love brownies. They're one of my favorite things. You'll like this recipe.
Mm-hmm. 800-462-7413, that toll-free number to the phones now, Zorba. We welcome a listener in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I am wondering about calcium.
Okay.
I have been hearing lately that there's new research that big doses of calcium can be bad for your heart. And as a 33-year-old woman who's been taking calcium supplements for almost half my life, I'm wondering if I'm hurting myself by doing that and if I need to switch to a different way of getting my calcium, which seems very labor-intensive because I don't know how much milk I can drink every day. Yeah. So I'm just wondering what Zorba has to say.
Yeah, glad for the question because that has been in the news late.
It has been. In fact, I wrote an article, and I did a bunch of research, looked at a number of articles, and the answer is yes, there is an increased risk of heart attack rates in people presuming that they should have it to protect their bones. So let's kind of look at the research. First of all, the research that you need lots and lots of calcium turns out to be very flimsy. Incredibly flimsy. In the UK, they recommend 750 milligrams a day. In Germany, I think it's 1,200 milligrams. In France, I think it's 1,000 milligrams. In the US, we're at the top of 1,800 milligrams. And I have no idea where that number came from. But it wasn't based on sound science. It was based on a lot of junk science.
Well, it's not true that calcium helps prevent bone loss?
We need a certain amount of calcium, but the amount of calcium and how we get it is the issue. So, first of all, let's look at elemental calcium, which is what you get in your pill. Basically, if you take a calcium pill or a calcium chew, you're eating chalk. That's what calcium is.
Yeah.
The data shows that if you have a burst of calcium, a 1,000 milligram tablet, for instance, a Tums, I think it's extra strength, and I used to recommend that. I said, take two of these a day and you're fine. Mm-hmm. Increases the calcium level suddenly in your bloodstream when the calcium is absorbed. And it's when you take it, maybe a half an hour or an hour later, when you've got a higher than normal calcium level, that at that moment you run a higher than normal risk that you're going to have a heart attack. That's what the data shows. So first off, I recommend that we don't take 1,000 milligram calcium tablets, that you don't exceed at any one sitting a 500 milligram tablet. And that's number one. So you can take a calcium tablet 500 milligrams. And the dosage I recommend for calcium is between 750 and 1,000 milligrams a day. Because the data shows when you drop below 750 milligrams, especially if you're a woman going through menopause or a male who's over 60, then you do run a risk. We need about 750 to 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day.
Yeah.
Now, you have the pills and you have the food. And from a food point of view, a container of yogurt, a regular size container of yogurt, has approximately 400 milligrams of calcium.
Okay.
For milk, you've got to drink a lot of milk. I don't remember how much calcium there is in each glass, but it's like a lot of glasses, three glasses or four glasses. Mm-hmm. But a container of yogurt is 400 milligrams. You can look it up, Google milk and find out. And there's also evidence that calcium that is in food, either in dairy products or in fruits and vegetables, is possibly absorbed differently in the body than elemental calcium. So when I sum all this up, my recommendation is if you are a if you're not a vegan and you'll eat any kind of animal products, put it in your sort of way to do it. If you like yogurt, have a container of yogurt a day or an equivalent amount of dairy, and then take a 500 milligram calcium tablet a day and you're fine. And you don't have to, you can do them both at the same time. It's that you don't want to take a 1,000 milligrams of calcium at one time anymore. The data shows the increase in heart attack rate is real, small, but it's real. Does that answer your question?
It does. Yeah, that's exactly what I needed to know.
Yeah. It's now, do you exercise?
I do.
Okay, very important. One of the issues, the reason you want to maintain bone health is you don't want to get a fracture. Exercise is important. Exercise means weight-bearing exercise and balance because you're less likely to fall. Tell me about your mom. Mom is and dad, do they have any history of osteoporosis?
My mom is working on it right now. And she's one of the reasons that I started so early.
Excellent.
Yeah. The research about early is better. Build bone mass later in life.
So. Absolutely. Now, did your mom smoke?
Nope.
Your mom did not. Okay. A smoking thin white woman is more likely to have osteoporosis than a full-figured African-American woman who does not smoke. And African-American women are not as likely to get osteoporosis. It's their bones, the African-American hereditary bone is stronger than the thin white woman Caucasian bone. And one out of four hip fractures occur in men. So it's not as if men are immune to this at all. So 500 milligrams of calcium, if you don't take dairy. You might take 500 morning and evening, but not at one time. So enjoy your yogurt.
I will.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Yeah, bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Can I tell Zorba whether my bones are any good or not before I break one?
Yeah, just knock them. You know, take your bone
I'm serious. There's no way.
Sure you can. A DEXA, densitometry examination from your doctor will tell whether or not you have osteoporosis. And this is not an X-ray. It's called a DEXA, DEXA.
Yeah.
It's also called a density examination. And if you've got a family history or you've had a fracture, there's certain rules that we look at to determine if it's worthwhile. But the answer is yes. And when I fractured my ankle, broke my ankle in three parts, the first thing I did was get a density examination to find out if I was just clumsy or had osteoporosis. Yeah. And guess what the answer was?
You're clumsy.
That's right. I was just clumsy. I couldn't blame it on osteoporosis.
That's not a shock. I had one of those.
It's not a shock. Thank you for the compliment.
I had one of those tests years ago. And I was sort of, what do you call it, before your
osteopenia. Now, osteopenia is mild, moderate, and severe. There are three classes of it. If you're severe, you actually do progress to osteoporosis rather quickly. So the answer is yes. If you have mild osteopenia at the beginning, the chances are 5 out of 100 that you will develop into osteoporosis. So it's very important if your doctor says you've got osteopenia, you say, is it mild, moderate, and severe before you take a drug that you may not need.
Good. I think mine was mild. 800-462-7413, toll free. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Collinsville, Illinois. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. Tom.
How can we help?
Well, my question is about weight loss and management. I recently read a book that argues that our weight problems lie in carbohydrates and sugars, and that the key to good health is the kind of calories we take in, not the number. I know that you and many others have always said calorie in, calorie out, and I was wondering what you thought of this theory.
Well, there's a lot of research and a lot of discussion because America, no matter what we do, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Since we started on a low-fat diet, we got bigger and bigger and bigger. And with all the diet books that are out there, and if you go to a bookstore, do bookstores still exist? If you go to a bookstore,
I'm putting them out of business with my Kindle.
And,
I'm sorry to say.
And you go online. Most of the self-help books in this country, I bet 40-50% are how to lose weight, because it is a big issue. Now, the issue with calories are a couple of fold. What's more satisfying? That's the issue. So I recently read an article that said we're only eating 250 more calories a day than we did in 1978, but we are much bigger than we were in 1978. And so it's not just calorie issue. It's also how do you feel when you eat your food? And the people who have more fat in their diet tend to be more satisfied and probably eat less calories. But there's, you know, there are books that say don't eat this and you lose weight, don't eat this and you lose weight, don't eat this and you lose weight. And a small number of calories, 250, 300 calories, that is a Snickers bar. That's 210 calories. It's not a lot of food. Can make a big difference.
But bottom line, are you still saying as you have?
Well, bottom line, one calorie
is a calorie
If you do accurate analysis of what people eat in an environment where you can measure for everything. Mm-hmm. The people who are heavier eat more calories. Now, that's a fake environment, right? You're watching all the food that they eat, and they write it all down, and they're sitting in a hospital room, and you measure it. So it's not what it is in the world environment. So I get more and more confused. I still think calories are the most important thing, but I don't know if there's a difference between calories. And I don't know, for instance, if high fructose corn syrup really is metabolized differently, because there's some people who say, yes, it's very much metabolized differently, and others who say, no, it's simply sugar, and it gets murky. So if you notice, I didn't answer your full question here. I sound like a politician, right? Ask me another question, and I won't answer it.
Well, and it's, for me, I went from kind of a, almost a vegetarian diet mm-hmm. to, I was running, uh-huh. 2 miles a day, and mainly because, one, to lose weight, two, to lower cholesterol, mainly. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much cut out all eggs. I cut out all red meat, almost meat in general.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of worked for me. Uh-huh. I'm able to at least, believe in my mind, I'm able to manage my weight
You just hit the point. The point is, there are different diets for different people that work for them. And as long as we're satisfied, because we tend to eat more than just satisfaction, it's what works for you. And I think it's like, one size doesn't fit all. One restaurant doesn't satisfy everyone.
Right.
One way of life. And I think fitting it, I don't think there's any overall overarching thing that does it. So thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate it. 800-462-7413. You brought in a topic that deals with the weight loss.
Yeah. From the New England Journal, recent article, Myths, Presumptions, and Facts About Obesity. So here you had a bunch of scientists getting together looking at what we know scientifically about myths and facts about obesity. And when I looked through this, I was sort of shocked about the myths. So these are seven myths about obesity.
Okay.
A small sustained change in energy or expenditure will produce large long-term weight loss.
Does anybody really think that?
I thought that. I thought, walk for 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day, and you'll lose some weight. I thought that for a while. But these are myths that are believed by lots of people.
Got it.
Setting realistic goals in obesity treatment is important because otherwise patients will become frustrated and lose weight. I thought that. What's a realistic goal? 10 pounds, right? Do that. Otherwise, you'll be frustrated. It turns out, they get frustrated all the time with losing weight. The goal is irrelevant.
Oh, whether the goal is 50 pounds or...
Or 10 pounds. It gets frustrating if you don't lose weight.
Large and
rapid weight loss is associated with poor long-term weight outcomes versus slower weight loss. In other words, if you lose it quickly, you're more likely to put it on. That's a myth.
I never thought that.
Well, you don't have weight problem. A lot of people think that.
Okay. Yeah.
All of this because you're a normal weight, just you've never thought about.
Yeah.
Assessing the stage or change of diet readiness is important. In other words, are you ready to go on a diet? Don't give advice if you're not ready. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Give advice in either case.
Okay.
Physical education classes in their current format play an important role in preventing or reducing childhood obesity. In other words, get our kids into PE classes.
They don't work?
No, they don't work. The kids who have PE classes are just as overweight as the kids who do not.
That's a surprise to me.
Breastfeeding is protective against obesity. I thought that.
Yeah.
Breastfeed your child. The answer is it's a myth. The belief that breastfed children are less likely to become obese has persisted for more than a century, is passionately defended, and it's a myth. It doesn't turn out. Breastfed babies are just as heavy as not. And here's a good one. A bout of sexual activity burns 100 to 300 calories. This is something near and dear to my heart.
Why do you think
Have
I'm
sex.
Skinny?
I love it. Look down the street and the thin men are having sex all the time. That's exactly what it is. You can tell who's having sex and who isn't having sex.
Okay.
Many sources state that substantial sexual activity is expended in the typical sexual activity between two adults. It isn't.
Okay.
That isn't the case. Fascinating article. We will give the reference to this on our website, zorbapastor.org. I think this is a dynamite article. And read the part about sex. I think it's the best part of the whole article.
Lots of interesting
Woke
stuff.
You up, didn't it?
What?
Thin Tom. We know what he's doing.
1-800. Let's move right along. 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Maryville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi. Hello. Great to be on the show with you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. How can we help?
Well, I have an interesting skin problem that I wanted to get your take on. I'm 29 now, and since I was about 12 or 13, the skin on my face is so dry that if I just, you know, rub it with my hand, you know, it'll flake off. So there's flakes in my eyebrows and stuff like that.
Hmm.
At the same time, though, it's oily. It's so oily, and then I have shiny skin. And since I don't want shiny skin, I'm wiping my face all the time. But when I wipe my face, the skin flakes off because it's so dry.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to figure out why that is, if I'm deficient in something, mm-hmm. but I've tried just regular, I don't know, moisturizing creams just because it's dry, and that doesn't really do anything,
mm-hmm.
and I have not been to a dermatologist.
Okay, well.
But I'm just not sure what's going on.
Sure. Now, this has gone on, you said, for many years.
It's
gone on for a long time. And you've tried many different soaps to see what will happen. You have dandruff, by the way?
Yeah, I do, and mm-hmm. I tried Head and Shoulders.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think it says somewhere not to put it on your face.
Uh-huh. So I'm going to make a suggestion. Get Selsun Blue, put it on your face, let it sit for 5 minutes, and then wash it off. That may take care of the whole problem. Selsun Blue, what it sounds like you have is something called seborrheic dermatitis. Dandruff is sort of part of that whole that whole malady that is there. And Selsun Blue is an excellent shampoo. And shampoo is really soap and a different emulsifier within it. And you can use it on your face. And if you just rub that on your face, let it sit for 5 minutes, take it off, and get it under control. I would do it probably once a day. At least, maybe twice a day. Get it under control that way, and you may find out doing it once a week or twice a week will do the trick. But that's a non-pharmacological way of dealing with this. There are prescription creams that you can use, 2.5% hydrocortisone, 0.5%, which is over-the-counter, is not going to do it. But 2.5% hydrocortisone can do it. But frankly, the Selsun Blue is safer.
What
is
this? Isn't this unusual, the oily skin and flaky skin?
No, it's not unusual. They tend to be linked together. It's not unusual. Comment at all, and Selsun Blue is just a mild anti-dandruff type shampoo and anti-seborrheic. And there, as I said, there's stronger things to do. Your family doc, your local dermatologist, your curbside country dermatologist, corner dermatologist will take care of it. That doesn't do Botox and makes money on that, but is interested in skin problems. But I would try the Selsun Blue. Let us know, and let us know what happens. And we'll put a link on our website all about seborrheic dermatitis. So I'll find an article on there. And if you go to zorbapastor.org, I'll link an article about seborrheic dermatitis and all the things you can do. But that's what I think you have without looking at you. I can't see what you look like in the radio, but it's my best guess. There you go. One day it'll happen. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for your call.
Thank you very much. I'll try that. I'll let you know how it goes.
Please do so. Thanks.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, before we take a quick break, let's head to another round of Stump the Doc. Angie in Knoxville, Tennessee, needs your help with some long-lasting leg pain. She wrote us about her dramatic dilemma and says, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I enjoy your show every week. I'm a 58-year-old woman with a small sheep farm. About a year ago, my 250-pound ram, Sid Vicious, decided I wasn't feeding him fast enough and hit me in the thigh.
Well, that's what rams do, you know.
Needless to say, I suffered a horrible bruise.
Oh, yeah.
Also needless to say, mm-hmm. Sid Vicious no longer lives here."
Does Sid Vicious exist is the real question.
I'm guessing, maybe not. The bruise healed, but I've had increased pain in that leg, bad enough to wake me up at night. Is there anything else I can do to heal? P.S., I firmly believe that I'm about 21 years old, both physically and mentally.
Well, the problem is some injuries are painful for a long time. They can be painful for a year or two. I fell on the back, unfortunately, doing exercise, and for about a year to a year and a half, this one spot just hurt me. And then magically, it disappeared. Mm. So if you were rammed by a ram, that means you probably had blood in your thigh.
This is about a year ago.
Blood is very irritating. You know, one of the things you sometimes can do is go to a massage therapist, and they will do deep tissue massage to try to break up a clot that might be beneath the surface. You may have some scar tissue that's in the muscle that's causing pain, and sometimes deep tissue massage will push away that scar tissue and make it more comfortable. So I would recommend that you consider a massage therapy for this. If it's been a year, that's what I would do.
Think you can stump the doc? Don't be sheepish. Send your questions along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a yummy dessert recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster too, and some more research to talk over. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up at 800-462-7413 right after the recipe. And Zorba, this time around, a recipe from our program producer, Gabrielle Pedriani.
That's
we have not tasted this recipe yet, and it better be good.
Be good. Yeah, what we decided was, if it's good, I get credit. If it's bad, she gets credit.
Fudgy olive oil brownies.
Now, the important thing here when we look at it is we happen to love chocolate, right? Well, you love chocolate.
I eat chocolate just about
every day. Chocolate is one of the basic food groups.
Of course.
Chocolate, sugar, starch, and grease. Those are the four basic food groups. But chocolate is wonderful.
Right.
Olive oil, we've learned from the Mediterranean, the wisdom of the Mediterranean diet is the best oil to have. The more olive oil you have, the better off you are for your heart. That's what the data shows. So if we can move chocolate, fudgy, and olive oil together and make it into a brownie, all we need is good taste. And of course, if Gabby made it, it must be good.
We'll find out.
Yeah. We have not tasted it, folks. You know, folks who are watching this on television, reality TV. That's, I love it. Public radio, reality TV, which is radio, so it's blank.
But we ought to get a camera, and then we can be on TV.
We ought to get a camera and put it on. I don't think that's ever going to happen, Tom, where we have a camera. You mean you and I have a camera that follows us around, like whatever the reality TV show is? You mean like Jersey Shore?
Yeah.
Okay, so quarter of a cup of extra virgin olive oil.
Quarter cup extra virgin olive oil.
Quarter of a cup non-fat Greek yogurt.
Quarter cup non-fat Greek yogurt.
Quarter of a cup of dark brown sugar.
Quarter cup dark brown sugar.
Half a cup of sugar or 3.5 tablespoonfuls of Truvia, which are roughly 12 packets.
I'll just say a half a cup of sugar.
That's right. And you can use the equivalent if you wanted to use with Splenda in that also. A cup of Splenda or 3.5 tablespoonfuls of Truvia.
Mm-hmm.
2 teaspoons of vanilla extract.
2 little tea vanilla extract.
Use the good stuff, and I make the good stuff. I'm going to bring a picture, and I'm going to give my recipe for vanilla extract. I'll do that. Yeah, and you know what? It's cheaper. It's inexpensive. I think we'll do that on the next one of the next shows.
Okay.
That's what we're going to do. Vanilla extract recipe. 2/3 of a cup of applesauce unsweetened.
2/3 of a cup of applesauce unsweetened.
1/2 cup of whole wheat flour.
1/2 a cup of whole wheat flour.
See, so we've got applesauce, which is going to add moisture. Mm-hmm. We don't have to use as much fat. That's very important. And whole wheat flour, which is going to make it healthier.
Mm-hmm.
1/3 of a cup of cocoa powder, plus you're going to need a couple of other tablespoonfuls.
1/3 of a cup of cocoa powder, plus
a couple of other tablespoons
with you.
A teaspoon of instant espresso powder. And you can buy that in many stores. You can get it in Hispanic stores. My son's wife wife, Luisa, my daughter-in-law, she's Brazilian, and they always have espresso powder around the house.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One little tea of that.
That's right. You can get it also from other places, Starbucks and other places.
Okay.
Have it. A quarter of a teaspoon of baking powder.
Quarter little tea baking powder.
Quarter of a teaspoon salt.
Quarter little tea salt.
Third of a cup of walnuts that are chopped.
Mm. Third of a cup of chopped walnuts.
You like walnuts, huh?
Yeah, oh,
you're a nut person. You mean nuts?
Everybody says. Tom and nuts.
We're not getting. Let's leave that for the future.
Yeah.
Preheat the oven to 350 degrees, and then in a bowl, mix the olive oil, vanilla, and the sugars with a spoon until it's smooth. Mm-hmm. Then mix in the apples. Then you take in another bowl and mix the applesauce and yogurt, and then together, and then you add that to the olive oil mixture and mix the whole thing really well. Okay, so you've got all the liquid ingredients, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Then in another bowl, blend flour, cocoa powder, instant espresso powder, salt, and baking powder. Okay, so and then you add that dry mixture to the olive oil mixture and mix it well. Pour in the nuts, line a 9-inch square pan with wax paper if you want. Pour the brownie mixture into the pan. You can, of course, do it without that if you've got a nonstick pan. Bake for 25 minutes until the toothpick inserted, you know, away from the edge comes out clean. Cool. Remove the wax paper if you're doing that, or parchment. Cut it into squares and enjoy. Good. What's it taste like?
Oh, delicious.
Mmm. This is really good. We have not tasted it before. We really haven't. Mm, I like this. It's a very interesting taste.
This can't be heart healthy.
Well, got 145 calories per serving. That's very few calories. 10% of the calories are coming from fat. Not very much. It's even got some protein, 4% of the protein. You mean if it tastes good, it can't be heart healthy?
That's right. That's right.
That's right. If it's good for you, it can't be heart healthy. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Well, let me tell you, this is the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
This is heart healthy.
And people can get this recipe.
If you want this recipe, you can get a copy. Go to our website, zorbapastor.org. On that website, you can see pictures of Tom and I, which I'm sure you're just going to love and want to frame. You can go and see this recipe. You can see our archive recipes. You can go to our podcast, download the show. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, back to the phones with a listener in Park City, Utah. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have been diagnosed with tendonitis, and the doctor referred to it as post-tibial tendonitis. It presented itself like a sprained ankle, the swelling, the pain, et cetera, but I hadn't done anything to get it. Mm. And I think in the past it was probably called dropped foot or fallen arches. And my question is, I love being barefoot. Is that a cause for something like this? Or how does one end up in a place like this?
Well, first of all, there are a lot of different things that you mentioned. A drop foot is completely different. And a drop foot is a neurological problem. Your foot is dropped. You may have had a stroke. You may have had an injury to there's a nerve that goes right around the fibula, and you can have an injury to that. You have a drop foot. That's totally different.
Okay.
And fallen arches also are totally different. It used to be with fallen arches, if you had a flat foot and you didn't have an arch, you couldn't go in the army because you couldn't walk 20 miles a day.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a reason to get out of the army. And frankly, you know, I don't really think it was much of a reason, but that was fallen arches. Mm-hmm. The concept that all of a sudden your arch fell, like you sag when you get older. But there is something called plantar fasciitis. Now, is that what you have? Do you have pain in your feet?
No, because I've had plantar fasciitis.
Uh-huh.
This one, apparently the tendon runs down the side of the calf and around the back of the ankle bone,
mm-hmm.
and then adheres somewhere in the arch.
Mm-hmm. Is it in the arch that your pain is? Is it in your foot?
Yes, and then around the ankle bone. So like I said, it presents itself a lot like a sprained ankle.
Right, and you walk barefoot.
Oh, I love it.
Well, you know the usual, you know what my advice is going to be. I hate to tell you, but the usual advice for pain in the arch or in the foot at any time is to begin to wear a shoe in the house. You know, it shouldn't be a little house slipper, which is, you know, if you go to Kmart, if they still exist, Walmart, Target, and you get a house slipper. It actually doesn't have any support in it at all. Most of them are just kind of fluffy things that you walk around the house in. There's nothing, no support there. But if you get a Birkenstock or mm-hmm. you wear something that has a good arch to it, a doctor's Scholl's wooden shoe, and you walk around the house like that barefoot, that makes a difference. And what you want to do is you want to start to, if you will, exercise the tendon in the right way. And just walking on the floor can just produce pain. So mm-hmm. what I would recommend for probably at least a month or 6 weeks is you get into something, a Dr. Scholl's, a Crocs. I used to have foot pain myself. I always like to talk about myself. It's my show, right?
That's right.
So I can talk about myself. Yeah. Not my deep interpersonal problems or my past lives. I won't talk about that. But I'll talk about my foot pain. Anyway, the other stuff I just post on Facebook. But I have discovered that since I wear Crocs, which I happen to like, with the bouncy sole, my foot pain has disappeared. I never walk barefoot anymore. But I don't wear socks. I go barefoot in my Crocs or mm-hmm. in that or in my Dr. Scholl's little wooden cloggy things. And they're good. So that's what I would do. I would just do that.
Okay. So then my barefoot days are over.
Well, in bed, you can be barefoot. In the pool, you can be barefoot. But yeah, you may discover, like others, that you just have to be in a sandal for a while, get over it, and then you mm-hmm. might be able to walk barefoot. Or those days may be gone.
Oh, well. All right.
That's right. So sorry. Thank you so much for your call.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your advice. I appreciate that.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
800-462-7413, toll free. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, on we go to El Paso, Texas. Hello.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba.
What's up?
I've got a very, very persistent cough. It's not so much very often, but it is incredibly harsh. And when I get into a fit, it's like I can't breathe. I have a gag reflex starts. It's really pretty bad.
And it happens morning, afternoon, evening?
Almost about any time. I've woken up in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've had it when I've started eating, uh-huh. or if just something wrong touches my throat or a certain spot, uh-huh. and it sets it off, and for 5 minutes I can't do anything.
Oh.
Now, a couple questions. Are you on any medicines at all? Any pills?
Yes, a few.
What do you take for your high blood pressure?
Bingo. Okay. Labetalol.
Mm-hmm. Were you taking something called Were you taking an ACE inhibitor like lisinopril or enalapril?
No.
Okay. The reason that I mention that is there is a high blood pressure, class of high blood pressure pills called ACE inhibitors, and they cause a dry cough. Hmm. And I'm not sure because, those are not the generic names. Whether or not you're on that, your pharmacist will know. So number one, number two, and number three is if you're on an ACE inhibitor, that's the most likely thing that's doing this. So you've got to find out if you've got an ACE inhibitor, and if so, that's the problem. Number two, do you have asthma?
No, I don't.
No. Ever have asthma as a kid? Exercise-induced asthma, running around?
No, never no. really.
Okay, no. Smoke cigarettes? Do you smoke cigarettes?
Nope, never smoked.
Never smoked. Okay, so you didn't smoke cigarettes. What about GERD? You have gastroesophageal reflux disease where, you have pain in your stomach sometimes after eating, or if you eat late at night, do you get pain in your stomach, sort of gurgles up?
I don't get any pain in my stomach. Now, my GP sent mm-hmm. me to a ear, nose, throat.
Uh-huh, okay.
And he checked my nose, uh-huh. checked my throat, checked mm-hmm. my eyes. I said, yeah. No, I don't see anything. It's probably acid reflux. Mm-hmm. Here, take that. Mm-hmm. And it's been about a week.
Okay, so
I still have the fit.
Let me go back with this, because this is an important thing with there. How much coffee do you drink?
Almost none.
Almost none.
Yeah, a couple or two or three or four a week.
And how much alcohol do you drink?
Again, drink maybe a weekend.
Okay. So the way to figure out whether or not you have GERD, because GERD is another common cause of a cough is, number one, zero alcohol. Number two, zero caffeine. No caffeine, yeah. No alcohol at all. Do not, if you go to sleep at 10, don't eat after 7 at night. In other words, finish your food about 3 hours before. Take the maximal dose of an over-the-counter, what are called proton pump inhibitors. So Prevacid is great. 30 milligrams a day you should take. like if you're going to take generic Prilosec, you want to take 20 milligrams twice a day, which is double the dose that's actually on the bottle, and be perfect. Just perfect.
And I haven't been exactly perfect.
Right.
No.
Got to be perfect. And I'll give you a personal example. I'd love to give personal examples. Years ago, I had a change in my voice, and it was hoarseness. And if you have hoarseness that's unexplained, you need to go to an ENT doc. Look down your throat. Went to the ENT doc, one of my favorite docs, who can't do surgery anymore because he has post-polio syndrome. Mm. He looked down and he saw nodules on my vocal cords. Now, if I were a smoker, first thing you do is biopsy it to see if it's cancer. Well, I'm not a smoker. So he said, but I can just take these off, but your voice might change. Well, I like my voice. I don't want my voice to change. So I went to another ENT doc. I got a second opinion. And besides, this guy doesn't do the surgery. This is years ago. And he said, I think it's GERD. I said, I don't have stomach pain. He said, try this. I went on Prilosec twice a day, stopped all coffee at that time for about 2 months, and the vocal cord nodules disappeared. Hmm. And now I can drink coffee. I can't drink too much, but I can drink coffee and my GERD doesn't bother me and I need the occasional Prilosec. So this may be your answer. Good luck. Let us know.
Sounds great.
Let us know, though, but try it. You're welcome.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, time now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today we have an email from an educated individual looking to chat about cheese. Lou, a professor of dairy and nutritional science at the University of Wisconsin, Madison, writes, I enjoy your show, but several times you've advised people who are lactose intolerant to avoid cheese. I am lactose intolerant, and I enjoy cheese daily, along with many other Southern Europeans. This is because most of the lactose is removed from milk in the cheese-making process. 10 pounds of milk yields 1 pound of cheese, and it loses the water, whey proteins, and much of the lactose along the way. Pun intended.
Pun intended. I stand corrected. And I'll tell you something. I got a number of comments about this from a number of people. You know, Wisconsin's a dairy state. How could I tell people not to eat cheese? And I thought, okay, I made a mistake. And it's the same with yogurt, that a lot of the lactose is reduced when they actually manufacture yogurt. So I stand corrected. For people who are lactose intolerant, you can eat cheese as long as it's from Wisconsin. We do it right.
If Zorba's advice has you dairy concerned, send your rebuttal along to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research to talk over. Some more of your calls, our medical myth buster. Don't go away. We're here for a while here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, we talk about autism.
Right. So autism is on the rise. We know that. Sampling of autism is also on the rise. In other words, teachers, parents are more likely to diagnose autism than they were years ago. But even given that information, we know that it has been increasing in Western countries.
Okay.
And so there's been a whole series of people who believe that autism is caused by vaccinations. In other words, vaccinations cause autism. Don't vaccinate your kids. So about one-third of the parents continue to worry that the vaccines that their children receive are causing autism. And one in ten parents across the country refuse to vaccinate their children.
Well, this has been going on for a while. Do we have anything new on
this? This has been going on for 10 to 20 years. The answer is yes. There are a number of studies that have looked at. We now have managed care organizations. In other words, your baby is in the organization. It's a health plan that you have, and we've got good data on these health plans over the years. And they compared children who developed autism to children who did not develop autism to see if there was a difference in their vaccination rates. Mm-hmm. And the answer was no. There was no difference at all. And a number of countries where vaccines stopped, especially the whooping cough vaccine, autism continued to rise. So the latest vaccine dilemma is the fact that, well, we're giving too many vaccines on the same day. And it turns out they compared children whose vaccines were delayed instead of getting four on the same day, which, of course, you get bothered. You look at your child being stuck versus children getting them on four different days. There was absolutely no difference again in the autism rate. And more importantly, it turned out the antigenic response to the vaccine is actually greater if you give more vaccines at the same time, because babies get hundreds of viruses that are around them and antigens, and they respond with a robust immune system that's actually good for them. So the bottom line is there is no good scientific evidence that vaccines are causing autism. But there is good evidence. There's a lot of money in the field for people actually say, well, autism is caused by vaccines. There are people who make money taking that stand, and I think that that's part of it.
Yeah. Well,
it's political.
A lot of things are attributed to
vaccines.
Yeah.
A lot of things. You know, if it were a pill, it wouldn't be attributed because it's an injection. And we know, just like pills, vaccines have issues. However, we used to have terrible measles epidemics, chickenpox epidemics, whole bunches of things that we don't see. I saw meningitis when I was a kid. You hardly see that anymore because of vaccines.
Yeah. Well, too bad you can't convince everybody.
Well, you'll never convince all of the people all the time. But I think if you have a child and you're wondering whether or not that child should be vaccinated, make a decision if you want to go with science or myth. And if you want to go with science, then get your kid vaccinated.
1-800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I'm awesome. How are you, Tom and Dr. Zorba?
Excellent. Thank you. Excellent. How can we help?
I have an age-old problem, I suppose. I have fallen arches. I actually was born with extremely flat feet. My doctor told my mother that I would never be able to be a long-distance runner. I'm in my upper 30s now, and I'm really looking at trying to get fit. And I was wondering if you could recommend a really good shoe so that I could run in, because otherwise I get shin splints really, really easily.
So you really are or want to be a long-distance runner?
Not necessarily long distance, but I'd like to be able to jog, you know, 2 or 3 miles to get a good cardio workout and to shed some extra pounds.
Oh, sure. Well, there are a couple of things about it. First of all, we'll go what you would do if you didn't want to run. You can bike, you know, obviously. And biking, you can get a lot out of biking exercise. Easy on the foot, easy on the arch, easy on the shin. And it's not going to cause you the same problems. And if you do it outside, it's great. You want to choose something hilly. And if you do it inside, you want to choose a bike where you're going to be able to change the resistance on the bike to give you a good cardio workout. In terms of running in shoes, first of all, it's kind of interesting. The doctor said, well, he'll never be a long distance runner. Clearly either. Was your mother a long distance runner?
No, she was not.
It's an interesting comment.
I'm not certain where that comment came from.
Right, but who knows? You know, it's one of those family myths. He'll never be a long-distance runner. It would be like he's never going to play piano. Look at the size of his fingers. Or he won't pole vault. No. He's going to be short, so don't sign him up for pole vaulting, but make him a gymnast in the Olympics. People with different arches can be fit with different shoes. And whether or not you have a high arch or a low arch, my recommendation is that you go to a shoe store that specializes in people with different arches. There are a number of athletic shoe stores. In Madison, there's a shoe store called Movin' Shoes that I recommend people go to because they really guarantee their fit. And then the important thing is not just when you're running, but the important thing is what do you wear off the running when you're not running? Do you walk barefoot around your house?
Not very often.
Okay,
every once in a while I do, but typically I wear house shoes that have memory foam.
That's excellent. Excellent.
I have tennis shoes that I've put like 2 or 3 gel inserts in.
Excellent. That's exactly what you want to do. And so you want to go to a shoe store. You want to pay more money, get the right fitted shoe with the right arch, and that'll make a big difference and keep you from having shin splints. And I find it interesting. I used to have sort of cowboy boots that I would wear in the winter that I really, really liked. And what I discovered probably a number of years ago was that the heel on the cowboy boot, I am a short person, so mm-hmm. this was sort of a higher heel boot, was giving me back pain. And so I put the shoes away, and whenever I would wear the shoes because I'd wear it to go out, I would get back pain. And so I discovered that heel was too much for my body, that for whatever it was, I just wasn't standing the same way and it would produce pain. So I don't wear those shoes. I got rid of them. And so it's the same thing. You need to go to a good athletic shoe store. There's one in your city. If you have any questions, what you do is talk to your local trainer or talk to somebody who is involved with running, and they'll tell you where to go. That's the way
perfect.
To do it. Yeah. Don't buy it over the web. In this case, you need a personal fit.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks
Sounds
for your call.
Good. Yeah.
Good luck. Shed the pounds. Lose the weight.
Yeah. Two follow-ups. One, I can't picture you in cowboy boots.
I was in cowboy boots. That's right. Yeah,
two, are tall people better pole vaulters than short people? I don't think so.
No, as I was thinking that, I thought maybe they're not better pole vaulters. Maybe it has nothing to do with height at all. That's right.
1-800.
They're better basketball players on
that. Yeah, you got that right. 800-462-7413. Time now again, Zorba, for a medical mythbuster. I know that I'm not alone when I say the most annoying songs always seem to be the ones that get stuck in my head. Is this true? Are the obnoxious songs the only ones that we obsess over?
Well, they're certainly the ones that I can't stand to get in my head, so they're not a myth. We all have it. It's the ones that we tend to repeat over and over again, and it's hard to get rid of them. Don't you find that?
Oh, yeah, almost
it's
impossible.
Like, it's like, I'm sick of this song. I don't want to think about it. I think about it again, so it's not a myth. Now, why is this actually happening? I don't know, you know. It's the curse of the song. I have no idea. What do you think?
I'll bet it isn't really that the junk songs are more annoying, because... sometimes I get little bits of really good songs.
But it's
the length of it, I think.
Yeah, it's the length, or it's just the repetition. Sometimes it's an opera song, and I'm just in there. I don't know. Maybe I've listened to opera or a show tune. You know, one person's junk is another person's treasure.
Yeah. I get a lot of blues going on in my
head. See, I never have blues. You have blues going on in your head? Yeah. I love it.
Have a myth on your mind? Don't let it play on repeat. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
In response to your previous call, I'm 5'11", and I'm not a pole vaulter or a basketball player. But I'm actually a runner, and I'm recently training for my first marathon. Mm-hmm. And I'm training pretty responsibly. My runs during the week are usually short speed work and cross-training and yoga and stretching, and then I have one long run on the weekend. But my question is, well, statement then question, last week I started to notice swelling in the back of my left leg, like right above or below my calf, but above my ankle. And so I did what everyone does. I went on WebMD and entered all of my symptoms and everything. And what I've kind of concluded, I think it's just tendonitis just from overuse.
Mm-hmm.
And being just a former athlete in general, I kind of know like a pain versus an injury. So I don't think it's really like injured. I don't think I've done any like severe damage. But my friends who don't really run and other people have recommended compression sleeves and heel cups and all types of crazy things. So I was just wondering what you guys think it may be.
Well, wait a second. Your second opinion was from WebMD. This is now DocMD. That's right, DocMD. Doc Radio MD. That's about that. Usually tendonitis is when you're a runner, when you're a jogger, if you're a pole vaulter or a gymnast.
Yes.
And you know, I don't know much about pole vaulters. Maybe I should research more. But generally, tendonitis is a very, very common thing. And it happens from overuse. It can happen from repeating the same thing over and over. and over again are doing too much weight if you're doing weightlifting. And the response for most of these are a matter of ice initially to the area, 24 to 48 hours, followed by heat, stretching exercises, and anti-inflammatories. And they usually, you know, that usually does the trick. Now, in terms of the lower leg, what we always worry about in the calf, especially if it's the calf, is this thrombophlebitis, is this inflammation of a vein within the calf. And for the most part, it isn't. It's usually tendonitis. But sometimes you need to have an evaluation to see if that's what it is. How is it right now? How is it going at this particular time?
Well, I did take a week off of running, but mm-hmm. I'm kind of addicted to it, so I had to get out and do my long distance. And it wasn't until after where I kind of felt the swelling again and kind of stiffness in it.
So how long do you normally run when you run?
At least 10 miles.
10 miles. Okay, that's quite a distance. How long did you run at this last run?
12.
So you did 12 miles. So what you want to do if you've got an injury is do less. Now, I know it's a really difficult concept. How can I do less versus I want to go back out and get back into my rhythm? Because as a runner, you're addicted to the amount of running that you do and you really like it. But I think what I would do is I would ease back into it. And either I would stop, you know, reduce the duration or reduce the intensity or reduce both the duration and intensity, see how you do, and then gradually increase to go back. So you may have done a bit too much at that first run.
Yeah. I bet so.
I think so. That's what you ought to do. So take care. Keep running. Great exercise. I loved it when I used to do it.
All right. Thank you guys very much.
You're
sure.
Welcome.
We appreciate the call. And before we head out for the day, Zorba, let's address a critique from Lauren in Brantwood, Wisconsin. Being the tech-savvy guy you are, lately we've used the term snail mail for handwritten letters. Lauren takes issue with our turn of phrase, but with good reason. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba Pastor, I listen to your show every week, and you often direct listeners to your website and say you no longer use snail mail. Every time, I cringe and say ouch, because I am a rural mail carrier.
Oh.
I'm not sure you realize how many of us all over the country listen to your program
That's
each
right.
week
oh,
in spite
right.
of the insult. So, we would appreciate it if you could refrain from using the term snail mail anymore."
I'll make sure that I absolutely do not use that term most of the time.
Well, if you think our dialogue lacks diplomacy, put pen to paper, a stamp on the envelope, make Lauren happy, and address your mail to us at
821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. And don't forget to put on a stamp.
What denomination stamp? How many cents goes in the stamp?
That's right. The stamp that's called the stamp that lasts forever, the forever stamp.
Yeah, there you go.
How many cents is a forever stamp? I don't remember. 40 something. Do you know how many cents it is?
No, I don't either.
It keeps on going up. I've got them at home, but I don't know what they are.
Anyway, see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org, and don't forget you can find us on Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. This show was produced by Gabrielle Pagriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leon Ben Sedrin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0420Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.